Hey, welcome into the All Ball Podcast. I am your host, Doug Gottlieb. You can check out the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio daily, 12 to 3 Eastern, 3 to 6 Pacific. We do not talk about basketball 24/7 or even sometimes often on the Doug Gottlieb Show. That's why we created this, the All Ball Podcast. All basketball, all the time. Darren Rovell is going to join me. He is the sports business guru. And I'll get his take on the China-Houston Rockets controversy. I'll only say this, and it's really, really important for people to understand. Like, I actually think you can do both. I think you can have virtue. You can be progressive. You can think of other people's human rights and not engage and involve yourself in international politics. I can. It's the nature of really any businesses that I remember studying World War I that began because of conflicting alliances. And I think we always have that problem as human beings, is that the conflicting alliances or the idea of can I have virtue and be virtuous and yet turn a blind eye to others' lack of virtue for the almighty dollar. One, Rovell will join us and tell us just how many dollars are involved in this thing. But two, this is like super important. I've worked now for three media companies. I won't tell you which media company I would say I'm politically aligned with. But there are people that are on TV for each of the three companies, or on radio for each of the three companies, who I don't necessarily respect their perspective or opinion on any one of a million topics. There are things that are done in business in my industry, people we take money from, that I can say, hey, behind the scenes, I don't want to take money from them. But what I can't do is I can't crush a sponsor, even if it's a sponsor that I don't want. It's other sponsors sit there and go like, wait, if this is how he's going to react to this, what if we do something he doesn't like? That's business. I'm sorry. And in this particular case, it's important because even if it's business, it's international business. And while you cannot like the human rights efforts going on in China, I also think you can kind of point out it's not our country. And these are things like, and NFL has this as well in a different scale, right? The NFL is, well, I hate Thursday night football games. Okay, you're going to give back the money, right? You're going to give back the money that you make because of the new TV deal, which includes Thursday night football with Fox, which is exponentially more money than NBC and CBS were playing combined beforehand? Of course you're not. Of course you're not. You fight the battles that you can win or that you can at least have an effect on. And that's the same to NBA players. Like, listen, you can stand against China all you want. You're allowed to. But one, your employers aren't going to like that because it hurts their bottom line. And two, and this is kind of most importantly, like, you're going to get that money back? This is like NBA players saying, I want a shortened season. Man, do I want a shortened season. Just too long. Like, okay, cool. You're going to get that money back. So my first takeaway for Daryl Morey, and like, I've done stupid shit with Twitter, is that was a stupid ass thing on Twitter. It just was. Now, he has become the story, which is kind of, and the Rockets have become the story in the NBA, and it has in many ways brought attention to something that, like, I think we thought it was going on, but I don't know, you ask average guy in the street, like, all right, who's got the most mistreated workers? We think, you know, Malaysia and Indonesia and sweatshops making our sneakers. We don't think of China, although when we stop and think, we're like, yeah, China sounds like a pretty oppressive regime, although it feels like maybe they're trying to come pull out of it, you know? So I guess mission accomplished, and maybe now Daryl Morey becomes unfireable. Like, this is one of those deals to where it's going to be really hard to fire Daryl Morey when this is a make or break year, because think about it this way. If he gets fired now, you get fired because you're cowering to China. Like, no, actually he would get fired because he's hurting the business of the entire NBA and the business of the Houston Rockets. Those are fireable offenses. But he could be a martyr if he is fired from his position. And he has done a good job. He has taken some risks that you don't need to take, including this tweet. But it is Twitter. I can't remember who first told me that, but Twitter is going to get us all fired. Case in point, Daryl Morey. So anyway, my summation of it is it's always dicey to go at a sponsor or somewhere that your company is going to get revenue from. Like that feels like a bad idea. And then when you're talking about another country's politics, like we just have no, I actually think people give Steve Kerr shit because the first day he was like, look, I don't study this stuff. My brother-in-law is a lawyer. He knows more about this stuff. Like I just, when you're just speaking out of your ass, which is what people do. People do it about Israeli politics. Right? They talk about Israel. All the time I've heard people, you know, the human rights efforts and what's happening over there, like, unless you've lived and you are over there, you probably shouldn't comment on it because you really don't know. Right? I mean, I guess that's kind of what we do about politics within our own country, even though different cities, different areas are so different than the places in which these stars and rich people live. I get it. But when it's literally not your country, literally halfway across the world, literally a different constitution coming from a completely different perspective and different value system. I'm sorry, but sometimes, guys, you got to sit this one out. It doesn't pertain to you. Like, I'm a paid opinionist. I'm paid specifically to give strong opinions on sports. And this does kind of revolve around sports because it is the NBA. But, dude, I have no opinion on it. I'm sorry. I just don't. I have no opinion on the human rights violations of China, what it looks like now, what it used to look like. Am I sympathetic to it? Yeah, but I don't know if it's better now than it used to be. I don't know what the protections are. I don't know. We have enough problems of our own to kind of worry about. It seems a weird one to take a stand, doesn't it? To anybody else? Now, what it also signifies, though, is though I pointed out that, and maybe this is that Daryl Morey is unfireable, this does make it easier for Tita to fire him at the end of the year or before the year. Remember, they got rid of almost the entire coaching staff, except for the head coach. They've come in and the owner has said, like, now we're doing it. It leads you to believe that owner and GM don't see eye to eye. And whenever that happens, somebody loses their job, and it's usually the GM. This gives them an easier out, even if they go far in the playoffs. Hey, it's not just about the playoffs. It hurt us business-wise, and we got to move on. That's real. But it's going to be a fascinating year in Houston. And somehow, the people in China are going to have to figure out a way to get those games on TV, right? I just can't imagine being in China. You're already part of an oppressive regime, right? You don't work for enough money. You don't have it. There's smog everywhere. Now, all of a sudden, you can't see your favorite NBA team play. Like, man, I was really looking forward to LeBron and AD playing together. I'll give you quickly a couple of takes NBA-wise before we get to Darren Revelle. Here's one. I do like what I'm seeing from the Lakers early on. And it is super interesting to me that the guy that people are talking most about in training camp is somebody who I think fits really well with LeBron and went from being overvalued to undervalued. Look, Avery Bradley has to make shots, but he's a tremendous defender and he doesn't need the basketball to be successful. And I think, you know, look, by year's end, it's going to be Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Avery Bradley, Danny Green. And then the question is, you know, can they get away with Alex Caruso? Right? Can Caruso make enough shots? Because he's big, he can defend, he can really defend. He's an excellent ball mover. Can he make enough shots playing off the basketball, playing off LeBron in order to be successful? Because if he can, that gives them, then they can bring Kentavious Caldwell-Pope off the bench or Avery Bradley off the bench. But that to me feels like their finishing lineup. We told you going back a month ago that Paul George wouldn't be ready at the start of the season. And it's weird because Paul George probably could be ready at the start of the season, but the way NBA teams are acting now, they're wrapping these guys in bubble tape. But the Clippers are going to be kind of an interesting evolution, right? Everybody's going to come for them. They open up with the Lakers, the Warriors. They go to the Suns, who I think are going to be far improved. They go to the Jazz in that first month. Wouldn't surprise me if in the month of October, when they begin their NBA season, they're just a 500 team. No Paul George trying to, you're not going to get Kawhi Leonard every night. And it's different to play basketball with those superstars. That said, end of the year, injury notwithstanding, they should be outstanding. I told you I think the Suns are going to be dramatically improved. I think the Nuggets are built for a great regular season because they're so incredibly deep. I mean, they're going to go 10 deep, but they could legitimately go 12 deep. That doesn't help you necessarily in the playoffs, but it will help you a ton in the regular season. And I don't see it with the Golden State Warriors. Like, do I think they could be a playoff team? Yeah. Do I think Steph Curry is going to put up crazy numbers? Yeah. But I'm not sure if people understand exactly what they've lost. Not just Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's versatility defensively as well as his ability to just carry you on bad nights. You're going to play without Klay Thompson for the first half of the year at least. And he was your best defender. And you don't have Andre Iguodala, who wasn't a great regular season player, but when you wanted a downshift, became your best, you know, one of your best defenders. And Sean Livingston. Like, all of this become an incredibly young team that doesn't have any depth on the inside, any real size on the inside, and it does feel like the NBA will value that a little bit more this year. And while Steph is going to put up crazy numbers and take crazy shots, that's a lot to carry, and that allows him, he's going to have to be allowed to take breaks on defense and not switch. The rest of their team is just not as good defensively. Right? Like, there's a, yeah, D'Angelo Russell statistically could fill in for either Clay or Kevin Durant. The problem with him, he's not nearly as good as either defensively. And he changes the way you have to play offensively. I'm not totally sure they're a playoff team.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, let's welcome in Darren Revelle. Darren Revelle is a sports business reporter for the Action Network. You can follow him on Twitter at Darren Revelle. And look, he's somebody that he kind of created this niche as far as being a business reporter, and he's been the guy. Been the guy for 15 years doing this stuff. All right, D-Rob, thanks so much for joining us. How big a deal is China to the NBA?
Okay, so China to the NBA, it's probably a $750 million a year business. You know, I saw the reports about the salary cap potentially being reduced by 15%. I wouldn't say that's possible. But if they lost all China business, you know, I could see, you know, 600, 700, 800 million being taken off basketball related income.
So listen, that's a huge number. Okay. That's a yearly number you're giving us.
Yes. Yes.
How much? So what's the basketball related income for a year? In like what percentage
eight
of that?
$8 billion, $9 billion. Yeah. So
okay.
So I mean, it's between eight and ten percent.
That's substantial. That's big. That's substantial. And it has almost unlimited growth too, which is the big part of it, isn't it?
Correct. Which is why they've invested so much time into it. Listen, there's so much into this. There's more colossal loss because there's potentially immediate loss from the Rockets' value alone. Tillman Fertitta just paid $2.2 billion to buy the Rockets. It wasn't the Memphis Grizzlies GM who said something. It was the Rockets GM, which they're the team with the greatest upside. He probably paid a premium of 15 to 20% because of the Rockets being disproportionately liked in China because of Yao Ming. So if you were to tell me that for the next 5 years, the Rockets are now going to be the most hated team in China and all their gear will not be able to be in stores, I would tell you that that's probably a $300 million valuation loss for the Rockets alone. Jeez. On one tweet.
I don't know whether it speaks to the power of Twitter, how dumb it was. Because I do think, like, I understand having virtue and doing the right thing, but it's still, like, all of us have bosses, right? We all have jobs, yeah. And we have to, it doesn't mean you have to kiss China's ass, but it does mean that you, there's certain things you can't do. All right, so.
So hold on, but let me, as you and I have sent some ill-advised tweets in our life. I probably sent maybe five, I probably put out 5 to 10 tweets out of my 145,000 tweets that have been bad. And I would say that all of them have one thing in common. I probably knew that they were not the greatest things to say, especially Twitter, because Twitter by its nature is out of context. I think I was distracted every single time, whether I was, you know, putting something out while I was rocking my son to sleep or something like that. I just was not 100% focused. And I believe Daryl Morey is a smart guy. I believe he knew that shouldn't have been said or could not be said, as a, you know, he's the GM of the Rockets in his position. But I think he was probably distracted and doing something else, and that I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. That being said, you cost your boss $300 million. I don't know if you're going to get fired. Usually you're fired,
yes.
But now there's this whole, well, if you fire him, you're saying that his speech isn't free and this is America. So very complex thing we're dealing with here.
Okay, I do agree. Now I guess the one question, or there's a bunch of questions I would have. First is, how reparable is it, right? Because I do feel like that some of this stuff, everybody reacts, you know, and every business says we're out and we're not doing it. And like, all right, we all kind of caught our breath. It was one bad tweet. How reparable is it?
Having been to China 3 times, and did you play in China or Russia?
Russia.
Okay. And spending 6 weeks there, it will take a very long time to undo this. It's just, that's the one thing you can't do. Now, I'm actually surprised.
What's a very long time?
So here's the problem. China will want to see that you were sorry and you were wrong, right? In a way that that democracy and human rights, the way that they have it set up, their lack of democracy and certainly their well accounted for lack of care for people, they want the apology. We're sorry for saying that, and the NBA can never do that. That's the problem, because of the pressure of what this country represents and the NBA as an American institution. So the reason why I say long is because Adam Silver can never give China what they ultimately want. And that's when you're talking about negotiations, you know, and by the way, it's everything or nothing.
Does China need us?
That's a good follow. That's a good follow, because I truly believed that China was going to lock, that the Chinese government was going to lock the arena and not let us play. I thought they would also not allow Chinese citizens to show up, because that was supporting the NBA. Both those things happened. They played and people freely sat in the stands. So yes. In the end, I think it showed that there is leverage from the NBA. Now, they didn't show it on Chinese TV. All the sponsors pulled. There was nothing on the court. But that's why I considered it, for business alone. Again, this is so complex. For business alone, whether you agree that the NBA should be in this business or not, I think playing was the win for Adam Silver.
Would it have been different if it was David Stern? Because it feels because
Adam Silver has a lot more goodwill going into this than David Stern.
With everybody, or with China, or with the player? I know Adam Silver has a ton more goodwill with the players, but almost a little bit, almost feels a little bit too much. Like, yeah, you guys are you do run the risk of half the country not liking you. Really? That's kind of what you'd...
But... Right. So part of me also believed LeBron wasn't going to play, right? Because he, you know, $8 to $10 million of his annual money that comes in is probably, well, let's just say $4 million of his money is directly coming from China. Okay? So, you know, does he do that? Does he not play? But then China wants the people in the crowd want him to play. But yes, David Stern did not have what Adam Silver had with the players, and I think it ultimately came down to the decision to make that dress code, which African American players went nuts on that. That's an older white guy imposing how he wants you to look, and that did a lot of damage. Whereas Adam Silver made the only decision he had to, but did it deftly with Donald Sterling. And so I do think that Adam Silver, in the general public sense, because this is also about the general public and the pressure that they put on Adam Silver and the NBA, I think that he had a lot of goodwill going in, more than Stern would have.
All right, last thing, and this is maybe a little thing, but this is an all-basketball podcast. There's a lot of these players. There's Klay Thompson's of the world. There's, you know, Dwayne Wade did for years. They have these deals with Chinese shoe brands, and now those shoe brands are saying they're out on the NBA. What happens to those players and their deals with the shoe companies?
Now, yeah, Dwayne Wade has this lifetime leaning deal. Obviously, he's out of the league, but it's a pretty big deal. And Klay Thompson has the Anta deal. They need basketball, otherwise they're in trouble. I mean, basketball is so beloved in China. Li Ning has suffered with trying to do a lot of other business. Basketball's been good to them. So I think that they, you know, again, this is so complex. Li Ning, the namesake of Li Ning, is the, you know, Olympic gymnast who won so many medals, and then he started his own clothing and shoe brand and became number one in China. So he's directly connected with China. What happens if he says, I need basketball, I need Klay Thompson, and what does the Chinese government say, and how do they penalize him? I mean, they could make Li Ning irrelevant. They could take him out of stores. So the power that the government wields is very big, but I would also say that basketball is so important to these brands.
Hmm. What's the next phase of this story?
Well, I assume that there's going to be some sort of edict from Adam Silver about commenting on this, and it depends on how, right? So Steve Kerr, do we believe that Steve Kerr doesn't know enough about Hong Kong and how it operates politically? I don't believe that. I think Steve Kerr is very smart and he's up on world issues. I do believe that most of the players do not understand how Hong Kong works.
Yes.
And what's going on and what the issue is. So the question becomes, as they learn more, does the NBA put out fact sheets, give them fact sheets? Does the NBA, quote unquote, allow them to speak? Does every team say every question must be on basketball? And then the question becomes, how compromised are players in everything social that they've done because they didn't speak on China? And how hypocritical is the NBA when they refuse to go to an All-Star game, have the All-Star game in Charlotte because of the transgender bathrooms? Do they have any credibility anymore? So I think the next story just depends on what's going to unfold. We already have fans wearing free Hong Kong shirts that have been, you know, confiscated in Philadelphia and last night in Washington, D.C. What will be the policy there? What happens if a player wears free Hong Kong in his warm-ups? This is probably the most complex. It's not JFK getting assassinated and Pete Rozelle having to make the decision. It's not Donald Sterling saying racist things and Adam Silver taking the team away from him. This is the most complex situation that a sports league has ever, in the history of sports leagues, had to deal with.
It's really amazing. So what I started the pod by saying is, like, look, I understand that. I agree with you on the Daryl Morey thing. The far-reaching I'm sure you had no thought of the far-reaching ramifications of it. But, like, look, you don't know. This is like when people now talk about impeachment. They don't even know the process of impeachment. You can be impeached and still be president of the United States, right? Like they don't even know what impeachment means. They know far less about Chinese politics. Nor should their opinion really matter. It's not our country. Now, does that make us hypocritical? Like, yeah. And could Daryl Morey have said, like, hey, it's hypocritical to be playing in China when we didn't play in Charlotte? Maybe that goes over differently. But I do think that it's one of those things that won't play well on social media. But in the real world, you can't be talking about these things because it's not our country and it's not our fight.
And I don't think people have context as to how it really works. I mean, I went to Vietnam and I was given a government minder to follow me around while I was reporting on Nike. And at one point we left in the middle of the night without the government minder. And they found this out and they were going to hold us and hold our tapes. And we had to get an NBC negotiation team in there. That's communism. And, you know, when I was in the Olympics in 2008 in Beijing, all the NBC people are standing on a stanchion and they have a quote unquote security guard who's watching us. And when I asked the guy trying to make conversation, what's your name? He says, Gary, in an accent as if he's from New Jersey, you know, listening to us for sure and reporting back. So knowing that and being skeptical and understanding that, I think most of America has been told how China works, but they haven't really seen it in practice. Until you see it in practice, that's when you realize what we're up against here.
Darren, you're the best. I love how hard you work. I love that you laugh off most people's shit that they give you on social media. And I love catching up with you, but you are an absolute gem for this story. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Doug.
Let's dig in here on a couple of these questions that we pulled off of Twitter for the All Ball podcast. This one comes from @Leroy's_bar. Doug, how do you see Juwan Howard doing at UM? That being University of Michigan. Look, I think ultimately he'll do fine. Do I think he's the tactician, the John Beilein? Not initially, but he can help you in terms of recruiting. And he inherits a team that though they lost Iggy Brazdeikis and Jordan Poole and Charles Matthews, they were built around Xavier Simpson and John Teske. You get the best defensive center and defensive point guard in the Big Ten. That just makes you look like a better coach. You inherit a point guard. You inherit two guys that'll help your culture defensively. I think you'll be pretty good. I really do. And I think Juwan knows ball. I don't think this... it's funny. I've used this expression, and you guys can steal this if you'd like. If it was rocket science, there would be rocket scientists coaching this thing. But it's not. It's ball. Juwan knows it. Smart guy. Been around a lot of basketball. Coached in the NBA. You know, does he have to adjust to the college game? Sure. But he's put together a good staff. He inherits a tremendous point guard and two tremendous defensive players. Do I think they will be as successful as John Beilein's team has been? Oh, that's an incredible thing to live up to. No, probably not consistently, but like Beilein's deal was, they had good players that they made look even better. And I think that's why Beilein's players haven't really been good pros. It's because they look so much better playing for him. Whereas I think Juwan's players, Juwan will probably have better, some better athletic talent, but I don't know if they'll look as good because, you know, Beilein was such an incredible coach. They lost their defensive coordinator, obviously. They lost a bunch of the program. They lost a bunch of personnel. And you got Izzo and his team loaded up. But I think Juwan Howard will do fine. Will he do great and get to the Final Four with average talent at times? No. But that doesn't mean he can't get to a Final Four because they'll have probably slightly better talent recruiting. Although, we'll see. We'll see how college basketball is evolving so much. When they change the rules and the one-and-dones can go straight out, what does that mean for a program like Michigan? Who wasn't getting one-and-dones for the most part, wasn't getting super highly touted guys, but now they would be, we assume, chasing after those guys. But can you might make the right decisions if you don't get them? I don't know. Michigan was such a good program previously. I think the expectations of living up to that those type of outcome is a little much. I think he'll do fine. And I think having Simpson, having Teske initially will really help him in his integration year one. This from at Field of 68 Freak, excluding Michigan State, which Big Ten team is most likely to go deep into March and April? Huh, really good question. Well, look, I think if you were to do tiers for the Big Ten, I think you put Michigan State kind of alone by themselves. Then you'd have a tier of probably Ohio State, Maryland. I think you put Iowa in there and maybe Purdue. Gosh, I don't know. I mean, they're going to look so different this year. I mean, losing all that scoring. Granted, they continually find a way to kind of remake themselves. But let's take a look kind of at Ohio State. You know, Ohio State's a team. They lose C.J. Jackson. They lose Keyshawn Woods. But they got Caleb Wesson back, Andre Wesson back, Luther Muhammad, Kyle Young, Musa Jallo, and Dwayne Washington. You add in C.J. Walker, who comes over from Florida State. He's a really good player. And D.J. Carton, Lonzo Gaffney, E.J. Liddell. I look at that team and, you know, last year they were 25-9. Chris Holtmann can really coach. They were second last year in the Big Ten. And of course, that was after they lost Beta Cates Diop. And this is 2 years with Holtmann and two straight NCAA tournaments. It's like automatically kind of turn things around. Caleb Wesson, I mean, obviously, it's going to depend upon his conditioning. I would say another year, and he'll only be better. And if he can stay out of foul trouble, he's a ridiculous weapon. And then I think you add the talented trio of freshmen with C.J. Walker, and you look at how Wesson continues to expand his game. I know I think they'll be really good. So Ohio State would probably be my pick for a team that I believe could make the deepest run. I do like Maryland a lot. Cowan back at point guard. Sticks. Morsell, who's tremendous defensively. Wiggins, Ayala. That's a good basketball team. And Cho Marial is not Bruno Fernando, but he should be able to defend the rim and to be some sort of nuisance. The bigger question for Big Ten teams is going to be like, all right, like let's look at Purdue. You lose Grady Eifert, Ryan Klein, Carson Edwards. Ryan Klein, he can make shots and then turn over. Grady Eifert, though he got athletically overmatched sometimes playing the four, did allow them to play small ball. And then Carson Edwards is a walking bucket. You get everything else back. You add in a big-time recruiting class and Jahad Proctor. Purdue will be interesting. I think Purdue and Iowa are the two teams that I think and maybe Michigan can get into that second tier. So there's kind of your Big Ten preview, if you will. All right, last question here via the Twitter machine. At the Grizzly Man 1, how good will the LeBron James Anthony Davis pick and roll be? Can it be effective against high-level teams in moments that matter? Do they have the shooting to rely on? Hope it's a good question. That's from Grizzly Man 1. It's a good question. I would say this. LeBron is... And having seen them only limited in practices and in, you know, the exhibition game at Golden State, I do think LeBron wants to really facilitate. And that kind of is the relationship with Magic Johnson. Like he wants to set people up. He wants to take it easy in the regular season, make everybody look better. And so far, so good. I think Anthony Davis is a big time player. Is he a big time player off the pick and roll? I don't. No, I mean, that's obviously, I don't think they're going to have a traditional pick and roll nearly as much. One, because LeBron's not, though he's a very good passer, he's not a traditional pick and roll passer per se. He likes to come off the pick and roll and get going downhill. All right, he's not a come off the pick and roll, split the thing, you know, snake it. He doesn't have all the point guard tricks. Can he shoot the three when you go under? Yes. But he always has to do that thing where he dribbles once with his right hand and then steps back to his left, you know, that kind of weird three that he shoots. So I think it can be effective in creating mismatches. I just don't think it's a true natural pick and roll because you don't have true natural pick and roll players. Do they have enough shooting? That's a huge question. Do they have enough defense? That's a huge question. Do they have enough guys that can create shots for others? That's a huge question. And remember, right now they're playing without Kyle Kuzma. How is their rotation going to look? Like, all these things are interesting. I do think that adding a guy in Anthony Davis that plays both ends, and a guy that I would guess very early on in the season wants to prove, not just to the league, but to LeBron, that he was worth all of the weight and all of the trading and all the nonsense, I think you'll get a lot out of Anthony Davis. My fears with the Lakers are age. Age leads to more injuries. My fear with the Lakers are how many guys do they have that can actually dribble and make plays for others? Really, it's LeBron and it's Anthony Davis. And both those guys are kind of ISO guys more than move the ball on offense guys. And then, you know, I think my fear is also that they're really big. And I'm not sure if big necessarily wins. Like, I do think length wins, but they're not long athletic defenders. They're just kind of all big. Like, Kuz is a undersized four, right, when he's at his best. And LeBron is a point power forward. And Anthony Davis is a 4-5. Like, Danny Green is just a catch and shoot. They just don't have a lot of guards. And I think that hurts you in terms of defending guards, and I think that hurts you in terms of creating shots for others, breaking down a defense, making the help come to you. But I do think they've looked good so far this year, and I think they look far more cohesive and connected than they looked last year. All right, that's it for the All Ball podcast. I'm already going to announce my special guest next week. You won't want to miss it. We grew up playing sort of on the same team. He's a little bit younger than me and kind of against each other in high school. We became radio rivals and college rivals, and now we're friends. It's Eric Chenoweth, former All-American center at Kansas. How can somebody 7 foot, skilled, good basketball player, plays at Kansas, never play an NBA game? I'll ask him. Plus, you can listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific. And, of course, you can download the iHeartRadio app or foxsportsradio.com, or just follow me on Twitter, on Facebook, whatever, and we'll always give you the good information. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to download, to subscribe, and to rate. Tell a friend about us. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.